Today we are at the CRL Gallery talking to the artist Rebecca Sexton about her work. I'm joined by the director of the gallery, Jade Walker. My name is Katya Rivera. Welcome, Rebecca. Since we're sitting in front of your work, would you mind talking a little bit about the process that you went through?
I started the process by getting a drawing of the gallery, by talking to Jade about the gallery and finding out more specifically about how what the gallery and the space looked like. And that was through photographs and schematics. And I had already done a version of this piece in 2001, so I tried to alter the piece to work specifically to the site, and that's always where I start. And this place was a little more challenging because I had never been to the site. I've never worked like that, actually. And once we determined the location of the wall and the kind of feeling the space had, I started to calculate how many flowers I would need and how many materials I would need. And the number of flowers was somewhat overwhelming. So then, in fact, it was about 1,600 Gerber daisies, which comes out to about 85,000 pins and 85,000 petals. And so then I started working on getting donations of the flowers so that I could even make this piece at all. And I wanted to be here, so I tried to put all those factors together, and I contacted wholesalers and all kinds of companies to see if they would donate the materials, and eventually got a grower in California to donate the flowers because they were so interested in the idea of the mentoring. They were really fascinated with that idea, and what I found out later was that the man who donated the flowers was originally from Chicago, and his father had mentored him. Wow. He grew up in the floral business, and his father was one of the first floral wholesalers in Chicago, and then he moved to California and opened a huge farm growing plant. So that all kind of came together neatly, and I thought that was really interesting, but of course he didn't tell me that.
I guess we should say at this point that you are living in Chicago.
Oh, I live in Chicago, but went to grad school in Austin, and of course I was really excited to come to Austin and do something. Then the next thing I kind of started working on was trying to figure out what kind of labor I would have, because I needed to figure out how many days I had to work with, how many people I had, what was actually possible. So I kept all these records of how long all the other shows took, and I started kind of calculating it all out in a real formula and modified the piece to that. And then once I got here, things changed a little bit because the space didn't look exactly like I thought it would, and I always respond to space. It's the experience of the space that often really influences and directs my work. Luckily, the gallery had laid out the painting and marked some of the walls, and I started just the process of dealing with the buckets of 1,600 flowers and taking the petals off and organizing all the people to put these into the wall. So first we had to mark the walls with lines so that we could pin the flowers in straight rows, and then we had to pre-assemble the pins and the petals into and hammer them into the walls.
About how many people did you have helping you?
I started on Wednesday. were you the first person to help me?
Yes.
Katya was the first person that helped me. And I probably had like 40 or 50 people
throughout the week.
Mm-hmm. So I had one person kind of helping me consistently all the time to prep the materials. Mm-hmm. And then on Wednesday night, Margot Sawyer's installation class came and helped me, and then some other teachers sent students who were interested in learning about this, and they all came and worked on different sections of the wall, just hammering in different petals, and that was really interesting because although we got a lot done, I was sort of panicked because I realized we didn't get nearly what I wanted to get done, but at the same time, it's all relative compared to the size of the space.
When you had put this piece up before, were you working with a lot of people as well?
No. I had twice the amount of time, and I had two people consistently helping me all the time, and then one of my former students, this was, I did it at Yale, and one of my former students was in grad school there, and she came by to visit and realized that, and she had been my assistant when I'd done this piece somewhere else, and she was like, oh, Rebecca needs help. So she came and she helped me, and I never would have finished without her. Yeah. So yeah, I basically had those two people helping me the whole time. Yeah. And that's been different here because I haven't had one person consistently the whole time. Yeah. So there's been a different experience with training people and having them get into the flow of doing it, because it's a really kind of meditative, well, for some people, experience, and it's really tedious, and not everybody, it takes a while to adjust to the materials and the process.
There's moments where I can see so-and-so's hand because they were so meticulous and they were doing things, the spacing was so beautiful. And there's other spots where I could tell that there was a shift between a person to another person. Can you see that when you're looking at the wall or as a finished piece? Does it flow into this whole thing for you?
Yeah, I definitely see that. There's like little, the certain, like the pins are pinned in at different angles, or they're straighter, or they're like nailed into the wall where there's only a little bit of the pin head showing. So I realized that pretty much immediately after the largest group of people was here. And I decided to kind of use that. And in a way, it kind of gave me permission to do something I hadn't done, because I liked that it, I didn't want it to look like it was badly crafted, because it was really important that it be really high quality and it really be almost perfect. The pin heads be lined up almost perfectly. But I liked that it looked, it made it look more like text. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to incorporate some of the writing on the wall a little bit more, and I'd always been interested in making the piece look more like text and more like a sketch.
Yeah.
And so this was kind of neat because it gave me permission to do that, because I just tried to deal with the situation, like to make the best of the situation, and it kind of evolved from that.
Do you find that each time there's a huge shift, or how does it shift as you reshow a piece that's similar?
It really shifts. Like, sometimes it's a physical shift where I might run out of materials.
Yeah.
And I did a piece at the Kohler Art Center. I think that was the first time I did it. And, of course, the curator directed me and had an idea. We want you to do this. We've got your sketches, but what we'd really like to do is see you do this. And I tried that. And then I ran out of flowers, the right color flowers, so I was running all around Sheboygan trying to find Daisy, and so was my assistant. So that was sort of my first experience with that, and now I think something's happened every time where either run out of labor or and help and hours in the day, or I run out of materials, or the space just, what I had planned for the space just does not work. So, but I don't like to compromise. I mean, I'm never interested in compromise. I'd rather pretty much get no sleep than make the piece not work. So, yeah.
I think it's really interesting that you compared it to writing or a sketch, which seems to be this very, you know, free-flowing, intuitive thing, and then the actual process of putting it up is very meticulous and time consuming, and you know, like almost the opposite of that. And to get that kind of feel about it, it's a really interesting relationship between those two.
Well, it is a conflict. I mean, sometimes when it is really meticulous, and every single thing I do in my work, even if it's making objects, which I do sometimes, and I come from that object making tradition and have a design background, but I think sort of my background in jewelry making has really influenced it in terms of placing these as individual beautiful objects. You know, I'm so attached to each petal.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, I'm always really attached to each petal, and now as I've done it more, I have the whole concept more in mind, so I'm very aware of that as I'm working.
Yeah.
Because I want to finish, and I always can't wait to see the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's also the biggest challenge with working with people, because they also get so attached to these things like specimens, and they just want to focus on that one thing, because they are so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of have to spur them on, you know. But I can't say that it's all completely intuitive. I do sketches, and I do have a basic concept in mind the whole time, and I never let go of that. So I might try to make it look intuitive or sketchy, but it's really not.
Yeah. It's funny, too, you talked about the time factor, and I would love to hear more about how it works, because this is, you know, a week's worth of hanging petals, and there is the progression. So there's the idea of time in the piece, because mm-hmm. the petals are dying,
mm-hmm.
but there's also the time that goes into this process of putting mm-hmm. it all up, and you had said, you know, in the ideal world, if you had cut off everyone, 10,000 people all pinning things, and if we could all fit on that wall, which I know we can, then you might be able to see this piece all as fresh petals.
Right. Yeah, when I first started these pieces, I think it really was this fascination with the individual petal, and I think this work all started with me looking at one rose petal and just feeling the texture, and there's just being so engrossed in sort of the little minute world of one petal, and thinking, oh, wouldn't it be so wonderful if I could just have a whole wall of these, you know? And I started trying to do the work like that in my studio, just, you know, spending days trying to disassemble these flower petals and get a wall filled with them, not just for the sake of filling them, but just, well, actually, sort of for the experience of seeing it like that, like preserving them and preventing them from changing in some ways, like a specimen. But then I realized that that was never going to happen. I really couldn't prevent the material from changing. But I always have this fantasy that maybe if I had lots and lots and lots of people, that maybe that could happen and they could all be like that on the night of the opening or something. But now I've learned that, on the other hand, there's some beauty in the fact that they are changing, you know, that it is all about the cycle and how things change and you can't prevent that, and just the contemplation of looking at the material and thinking about that. And that ties back into the process, like how long it actually takes, and that there's a correlation with that.
You talk about them, too, as material, and it kind of leads into a conversation that Kachem had with Maggie about how her work and the idea that the plants that are in her piece really function as stand-ins for almost a human character or mm-hmm. a person, whereas you refer to these petals as being a material, and there seems to be a real difference in your ideas on how you're using
mm-hmm.
Nature or
mm-hmm.
plants in your work.
Or this idea of luxury, using the material
right.
as an idea.
I don't think that I'm using them as necessarily, in the same way Maggie is, as a stand-in for the body. Or some kind of reference back to an internal state. But I am interested in the idea of luxury. And in the beginning, one of the things that interested me was this idea about sort of feminine stereotypes, and one of them being associated with flowers. Like, what are feminine stereotypes? Well, one is flowers, and they've been used throughout art history, like Georgia O'Keeffe and a whole number of artists who've made references to floral forms, and then women buying trinkets and little items for the home and decorating and things like that. And I was trying to use materials that were associated with feminine stereotypes. At the same time, I was intrigued with the idea. Once I started using all these flowers, I realized it was also this idea of luxury, using a material that was really precious and luxurious, and that maybe I would never give myself permission to buy all these flowers for myself, but I could do it for my art.
Yeah. You also talk about these as being, as seeing a cycle, that we're watching them as living petals move into dying petals,
mm-hmm.
and how the piece will change in the next 4 weeks that it's up on the wall. How does that kind of work? I mean, I know you and Maggie have had a lot of conversations now about how cycling works through your work, how you work with cycling. Do you think that you all have a common idea on that?
That one of the really great things about being here for this piece has been working with Megan, finding out more about our work, and I feel like I know her work intimately, but then I realize on some level I don't, because I've never worked with her side by side in the studio, and that's been really neat. I've loved it. And we found out that one of the things that she talks about is the hydroponic, the water cycling back and forth between the gallon drums and the plants, and just a continual cycle. And that is really similar to how I'm approaching these materials, because I'm kind of trying to prevent time from passing by using the process and the repetition of pinning and putting them on the wall and trying to preserve them and keep them from changing. It all kind of relates back to the to the human condition and how that how life works like that. It's a cycle, and we both found that out, and we're really interested in that.
Yeah, it's funny too, to actually see the physical cycle, but engage in the cycle of you being her mentor and then working with her in a studio like this. I mean, that is also kind of a cycle, to come back around to working together. I mean, you all have been in this space together for almost a solid week, every day until 10 o'clock every night, and back here in the morning. So you've had a chance to really see. She's had a chance to tell you things that that you told her when she was a student, kind of regurgitating those back to you as her mentor. So there's a cycle there too, I think.
Yeah, and that has been so inspiring. I really didn't. I had no idea it would be so inspiring. I mean, I knew it would be really fun, but it's been inspiring for my work and for my thinking. And I really love seeing how she's. I've just loved being together. And I've loved seeing how she's kind of processed the information and the things that she was interested in when she was my student now, and seeing and kind of hearing about her experience with other professors and at this school, because I think she's had a really great experience here, and her work is really strong, and it's just great. I didn't also realize how well I knew her work, and because I remember when she first came in my class and showed me some photographs. She had been in fashion, and she was showing me some photographs of these fashion pieces she'd done. And I thought, this is the craziest work I've ever seen. This is just all these materials, and wow, I love this stuff. And so I wanted to, I think she was trying to add my class. And it's really hard to add classes at the Art Institute, but I made sure that she got in because I knew she would be really good in metals. And she stayed in there, and she just kept working and working, and we discussed so many ideas, and I just think it's been fun to find out that I know her work this well.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't think I did.
And then coming back, I mean, really, she talks in her interview, or she mentioned in her interview how you were the one who suggested that she look at graduate school here. So then having you both back here in Austin, working in a UT gallery together, considering that you were the one that sort of got her here, and then you both went through the graduate program.
Right.
That seems to be
It's really neat. And, well, I think sometimes it's hard to find a program where you can get the intellectual stimulation and have the studio access that you have here. And I kept thinking, well, when she got more sophisticated in her work and was thinking about grad school, I couldn't think of very many programs that were good, but I thought this one would be really good for her, because of the freedom and the flexibility with materials and just the communal atmosphere, and I knew she'd be challenged in a way that might be good. So that has been fun. And also, another person that's here is Erin Cunningham. And she's also in metals, and she's doing really well, and she's helped me a lot with this piece, and it's been so fun working with them. Not just fun, it's been so comforting in a way, and so exciting and inspiring. And Erin, like yesterday, she came in right at the moment where I was starting to get weak and tired and just so feeling frustrated, like I would never finish, and she was sort of my project manager, and I trusted her to instruct the other people on how to do the work, and that made me feel really good.
I would love to hear on her end too what she thought of it, looking at, you know, a professor that she considered to be a mentor,
right,
giving her a little bit of control and
that
trust
was fun.
Like that.
I mean, I know But some people wouldn't do that, but that is, sometimes you need that, and I don't feel like I, sometimes you need a fresh eye, and it was nice for me to have both Maggie and Aaron here to, I trust their opinion. They're both really, really solid artists, and they can evaluate things, and I guess they know my work, too. That's another, they know kind of what I'm thinking about, even though I try not to bring that into the classroom all the time. They have my best interest as an artist, so they're going to be honest.
Yeah.
You'd mentioned that Aaron works with metals, and you do as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is relevant, but do people, when they look at this work specifically, start to ask you a lot about issues of feminist values or things that revolve around, I guess, feminist ideas more so than if they would look... So I'm just wondering, like, depending on the material you use, the kinds of questions you get about your work, does that vary ever?
Yeah, I think it really varies. I think that, you know, when I'm working, and when I research my pieces, I do so much research, and I'm constantly thinking, and really into the metaphorical aspects of the materials and the connotations of the materials, but... Depending on where I show it, it just that I get different reactions. A lot of times people are just completely overwhelmed that someone would even spend the time to do this. And, of course, I think that about myself as well. But sometimes they just are in shock, like, wow, this is so neat. Oh, these are flower petals, and they don't know what the material is. They're perplexed. So sometimes they stay right there. And then they might talk to me about it later, and they stay in the state of being overwhelmed. A lot of times they'll kind of get the association in reference to time. Time passing. This is a little bit of a different piece because there are words on the walls and some drawings, so it is more like a sketch in that way than some other work I've done. No, I don't think people, not that many people get the reference to the femininity.
Also, what is the jump in color for you? I know that, I mean, as you're coming up with how this piece is going to be laid out, color seems to be a really interesting, well, a really important thing for you. Mm-hmm. How does that play into your ideas on the work?
With this piece, I love color. First of all, this one, it all started with my interest in this acid green color. It's just such a weirdly putrid color that it's beautiful. And a lot of times I like things that are sort of repulsive and beautiful all at the same time. And so I started with that acid green color and just wanted to do a circle in the corner. I always like to make things that manipulate the space, use the color to manipulate the space. But I wanted to add more color to make it a little bit more contemporary, but I chose colors that don't necessarily match. I like the colors to be kind of odd and clashing almost, but be beautiful. And then there's a black line, which I just used to, there's a black line on top of a blue column, and I used the black line to break up the space of the blue. So I think of the work almost like a painting. I keep that in mind the whole time, but I'm also using the color as a way to engage you in different places in the work. And then this one also has this red camouflage pattern, which is my favorite thing, actually. And that, I think, is what makes it different from the last piece I did. That it's more of a reference to the body, but I think it's also just influenced by all the things that are going on around us, but it's pretty at the same time.
Have you done straight painting? Has that ever been in your
no.
studio? I kind of wonder. I mean, when you came in and did that patterning, I wondered... And I didn't get a chance to ask you in the course of being here for the week.
Yeah.
Have you, I mean, you talk about these being sketches and then you actually sketch on the wall. So
right.
I get the idea, or I imagine you in your studio, that sketching is important, and I know that from our correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
But you talk about color too, and I wonder, have you ever experimented with painting?
Well, I have my background is in design. Mm-hmm. So, and I did 2D and 3D design in undergrad, so I went to a very formalized program where this is pre-computer, so we did everything in gouache and did mm-hmm. color studies and had color theory, and I really liked all that, and I did a lot of fiber work with dyes and using dyes and weaving and embellishment and all those things, so I'm really, really into color. It really does motivate me, and I also think it's a great way to kind of influence the mood mm-hmm. in work. But no, I haven't done straight painting, but I use all these different elements, and even on the computer now.
Yeah.
I a lot of times do color studies on the computer, and when you do these big installations, you don't have the luxury of having a 30-foot wall in your studio to play with or the time to put it up. So I've learned to play with color through sketches on the computer and materials.
Yeah.
To see how things all work.
Do you think ideally for the viewer, when they look at your piece, would you like them to see all the different stages of the petals? Is that something that you want them to take away from that, is that it does change, or do you just want them to experience that one moment?
No, I think that I like them to go away thinking about how things changed, and it's more of a layered experience. So it's not just sort of the shock value of, oh, isn't it amazing that this person put all these petals on the wall? There's so much more to this piece for me than that, and I want them to have a more substantial experience mm-hmm. where there is some kind of contemplation, even if it is just even about nature. Nature changes, and you can see that in a fresh petal and a dying petal. So with this piece especially, I'm glad that you can see that where different people have put up different petals in different sections, you can really see, and I think that makes it better. It also changes the texture and the pattern of the wall so that you get engaged in different places more.
Yeah.
And it also makes the reference to text a little stronger with the positive and negative space.
So before we end our interview, I just wanted to talk about your experience as a student at the university and what kind of mentoring was given to you while you were here.
I had a lot of mentoring at UT and a lot of people that really influenced me in terms of my art and mostly my thinking. And also studio practice. I mean, I can't also underestimate the value of having a studio for 3 years and working with other graduate students, especially when you're working with a really motivated group, that spurs you on. And when there's opportunities presented, one of the great things, I'll get back to the mentoring, but one, I think, part of mentoring is money and resources and opportunities, and luckily UT has a lot of resources, and the faculty work really hard to present those opportunities for you, so you become more and more motivated. And I think there were a lot of faculty that took really strong interest in me and really spurred me on, and I felt like I was really challenged conceptually here, and that's what I'm most grateful for, because I hadn't gone to a school that was rigorous, but on the other hand, at my program you had to have a double major in art history, so I had a really strong art history background, but I didn't necessarily have the conceptual skills that I needed, and I didn't have the skills at talking about my work and working with, I did do art history as a minor at UT, and I did work with Ann Reynolds, and I did take a class with Richard Schiff, and I took advantage, and Jacqueline Barnett, and I did take advantage of all the art history, and that was amazing, because working with the art history students, being in classes with those people, was really a powerful experience and helped me to identify issues in my work, and just the level of intellectual engagement that was required for a graduate level art history class was That was a lot, but it was, I loved it. And with Anne's class, for instance, she presented information in such a challenging way that I just was really inspired. You know, it just, I had never thought about things that way. And plus, she showed a lot of work that I related to. And so did Jacqueline Barnett. So a lot of the work from Latin America has really influenced my work, and especially a lot of the female artists. So there was a correlation between those things. And in Richard Schiff's class, the subject we dealt with was time passing. Just time, that was our topic, and that really influenced me. Because I was interested in that kind of work already, like Andy Goldsworthy and Richard Vong and people who were dealing with kind of temporal things. So there you had a forum to explore that. And then in terms of studio, you know, Margot Sawyer and Thelma and Bogdan, Phil Lundberg, Sarah Canwright, Gloria Lee, Dan Olson, those were the people I work with. And they were always present. They were always engaged. They were always supportive. And I don't mean supportive in just saying, oh, you're doing a wonderful job. They really asked constructive questions. They gave me reading lists. They gave me artists to look up. They put me in contacts with opportunities for shows and to meet people, and that's a really great experience. So I think I had good role models. And by the time I started teaching, they made me feel confident, you know, also by being supportive, but mostly by challenging me. I don't really think anything comes by just telling someone you're doing a great job all the time. It's all about the art of figuring out how to get a student to identify the issues they're interested in the first place, and then how to express them in a way that people can understand. So I took that information with me to teach at the Art Institute and ran with it. So I think I had a good experience.
On a good note, we could end our interview.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.